show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a fantastically fun-filled show, as always, for you. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr. With me is the indefatigable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening? I need to circulate my adjectives better. I feel like I'm repeating now.
You've repeated those now and then, but that's okay. I mean, if it applies in your mind, then I'm comfortable going with it.
All right, I'm gonna have to bust out my thesaurus for next show.
Okay. No, overall I'm good. I had a weird, almost off the grid weekend, so that was kind of strange.
Off the grid weekends are never fun. My wife loves them.
No,
it's all, hey, let's go into the mountains where we don't have any cell phone service. And I'm like,
oh yeah,
I know the Royals are playing.
Yeah,
we got married in the mountains last year when the Royals. This is in August, so the Royals were just like on their tear, you know, and they went. I think they took first place like.
It was like August 11th or something.
Yeah, so we got married on August 9th, so it was a couple days after we got married, and it was so I'm like, some places where we would go, we'd have service, and I'd randomly get an update about the score. Other places we wouldn't, and the Wi-Fi in the cabin was terrible. I'm like, I gotta see what the Royals are doing, but. Off the grid weekends when you're a rabid sports fan can be a little complicated.
This was a cabin with like 20 other people just hanging out in it, and it had Wi-Fi, but it was like if you had more than four people on it,
yeah, it was toast.
It was awful. It was just unusable for anybody, and so we basically had to just go in shifts almost.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I was like, all right, I'm just gonna go outside and. Some guy brought throwing knives. We went out of the yard and threw knives at a watermelon.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, so we're just
so awesome.
All right, cool. Let's just throw knives at the watermelon.
Chuck this at a watermelon here.
I'll have to put the picture on Twitter later because I got two knives to go in it, and I was like, I felt accomplished. I was like, hell yeah.
Freaking ninja, man. That's awesome.
I can go hunt down our food.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, thankfully when I was... you know, getting married, I had plenty of other things to keep me occupied, so it wasn't that big of a deal that I
right,
could get the
right
score,
yeah.
But I would find out eventually. At least it wasn't the playoffs, right? And I really...
It's true.
Then we might have had to reschedule.
Which is something you never really figure you had land for as a Royals fan.
No, you don't. Not, so I was like,
August. Yeah, we can get married in October. Nothing else will be going on.
Yeah, it'll be totally fine. Speaking of the Royals, Mike, did you see? How about a segue, huh? How about that segue, right? Speaking of the Royals, we talked last time about the unbelievable fan ownership of the All-Star voting. And not only has it continued, it's gotten even better or worse, depending on your fan base. The Royals have now overtaken 8 spots for the starting lineup. It is 8 Royals and Mike Trout. You know what that means, Mike? That means Omar Infante, he of the sub 300 on base percentage, he of the no home runs, he of the what, like 3 walks in however many plate appearances he's had?
496 OPS or something like that.
Ugh, is going to start the All-Star game. You know, I mentioned this on Twitter today. Philosophically, I am opposed to voting Omar Infante simply because I don't think he deserves it. Far from it. Maybe he might actually be one of the least deserving players in Major League Baseball, even for especially for second base.
He really, yeah.
I mean, he's bad, but
he has no business. But
from a principal standpoint, and principle, meaning wanting to finally show the MLB how absurd this all is. By absurd, this I mean the All-Star voting for who starts it. That's the hashtag Vote Omar campaign is something I can truly get behind. And excuse me, it was all well and good when, you know, it's Derek Jeter when he doesn't really deserve it in the final year before he retires, or, you know, whoever the hell else it might be.
A Red Sox scenarios. Player who yeah, happens to be having a good year. Like Mark Loretta made an All-Star team. And, you know, with seasons that probably warranted being on the All-Star team, but the fact that they were in a big market ended up putting them as a starter when there right. were other guys who would more traditionally have been who you would see as starters.
And, right, because, like, sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the Royals fans have our fan favorites, you know, people that, that players that aren't necessarily good from a national perspective, but Royals fans love, they play hard. You know, people like Paulo Orlando and David Lowe and some of those guys that kind of catch fire with the fan base. And if you are in a bigger city, like you're the Yankees or the Red Sox, like you're saying, then there's a good chance that you, if you're having even a decent season that's respectable from a objective perspective, then you could easily get voted in because there's just so many more people that are going to get behind some sort of a campaign like that.
Yeah, and that's usually how it works out. You see some guy who you're like, how is he that high in the voting? And it's like, oh, he's in LA or he's in, you know, Toronto or something, just big cities with a lot of population, which is surprising that there's such a backlash to this kind of voting, because I mean, it shouldn't be that difficult to beat Kansas City. I mean, it really shouldn't be.
Right.
I mean, what is Kansas City? Like the bottom five market size in baseball?
I think they're the third smallest in all of baseball. Yeah.
So when you're talking about a guy like Jose Altuve, who was leading the voting at second base initially, Houston's like
top five city in America.
It's like, yeah, it's like 10 times bigger than Kansas City.
Look this up. We're going to look this up right now. I looked this up before, so I know it's easy to find.
And it's like Altuve is a really popular player. I mean, he's really fun to watch and root for and everything. There's no reason why Houston shouldn't be able to get behind a guy like that to outpace Kansas City, who, you know, Omar Infante literally is getting votes only from Royals fans and other teams' fans who just want to screw around with the system. There's no way that Infante would warrant an All-Star spot at all. He's got the worst stats of all the guys. But, you know, he started at second place because there was such a big rush of voting from Royals fans initially, and it just kind of caught fire and kind of engulfed everything else. And now Houston's just not able to catch up. I don't get it. They've got so many more people. They should be able to take care of something like this. And so that's why, like, the arguments and complaints just really kind of fall flat for me, because it's really, really easy to get this to not be a problem. But very easy. If your fan base can't get fired up to go vote for your guys, then I'm sorry. You know, it's the same thing.
I do not know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's the same thing as, like, when the Royals, like, last year I looked at some of the results, and I think the final results, there wasn't a single Royal in the top five of any position. And it's just like, you know, what, I mean, as a Royals fan, you're like, well, we should have some representation, but if our fans aren't voting for it, well, no, we're not going to get a starter.
How much we can do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I think there's a certain kind of resignation to that, because, you know, the first All-Star star, or the last All-Star starter from the Royals before last year, but the last one to get elected was Jermaine Dye in 2000. Last year, Perez started, but he wasn't elected. He filled in for Wieters, who was hurt.
Yeah.
But before that, I think the last one before that would have been Bo Jackson in 89. So you're looking at, like, 89 and 2000, and those are your All-Star starters.
And two in 25 it. Years.
Right. And so you kind of expect in Kansas City that you're not going to get these guys. And so when it starts out that the Royals in the first results post have 5 out of 9 starters, well, that picked up a lot of enthusiasm to push to get two more guys. And so I think it was Hosmer Morales overtook Miguel Cabrera and Nelson Cruz, respectively.
Yeah.
Which, you know, should that happen? Should they start over those guys? Well, no, Probably not, but you know, the Royals fans got it to happen. And then Infante was just even more. And so it's like, the more that people complain about it, it seems to make Royals fans vote more. And eventually what's going to happen is they're going to either change something about what the All-Star Game means as far as like the World Series and home field advantage, or they're going to change how they determine starters from either taking away the fan vote for it or probably more likely doing something like top three at most positions can be options. Something like that, you know, or like top six outfielders and top three everywhere else, just because there's no reason why Omar Infante should start an All-Star game. There's probably no reason why, like, Alcides Escobar, he's not hitting well, but defensively he's right up there. So
he was 2 weeks ago, though, or three weeks ago, he was hitting very well. So, you know, it's one of those things.
And those votes are already in, so.
Yeah, and just to put some numbers, I'm an accountant by trade, so let's do a little math here.
Crunch some numbers.
So just to stick with the Houston example, since that's the most recent Royal to overtake somebody, Houston is the fifth, and this isn't based on baseball markets. This is just markets in general, so it's a little different. But in this case, Houston is the fifth largest market in America, with metropolitan area, I should say. So just under 6.5 million people. Now all the teams above them are all baseball cities, and the teams below them, pretty much all the teams. I mean, the first metro area that doesn't have a baseball team is number 13, and that's the Riverside, San Bernardino, California area. And then let's see. I'm just trying to see. Okay, Charlotte here at number 22, and then Portland at 24, San Antonio at 25, Orlando at 26, Sacramento. So anyway, so there are a few, you know, five or six different metro areas that don't have a team above the Royals. But anyway, Houston number 5, Royals 29, out of just all metro areas in America. Houston having, of course, like I said, just under 6.5 million people. The Royals, Kansas City, just over 2 million people in the entire metro area. So that's literally more than three times the population. And each one of those people, assuming they have a valid email address, of course, can vote 35 times. So the fact that the Royals have gotten pretty much all their players, they have the equivalent of if every single person in the metropolitan area would have voted for a Royal. That's basically some of them multiple times over, but at least one vote from every person in the metro area is accounted for basically all eight of those starters. And even because I think Rios is over 2 million votes too. He's just outside looking in. So I mean, which is absurd, but,
and he has like six hits all year.
Yeah. And like just over that many games.
Right.
This entire argument of, you know, well, you know, stuff in the ballot box, it's like, it's easier for you guys to do it. All you people complaining, it's way easier. Even Tampa Bay has almost 3 million people in their market. And, you know, they have historically bad attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not out there voting. I mean, these people have the population. They have the means. They're just not doing it. And, you know, David Price the other day, and we all know I may or may not be somewhat of a fan of David Price as a player, excluding him from the fact that he pitches for the Detroit Tigers. Let's just throw that away right now. Let's pretend he's in a commercial where they haven't paid the Detroit Tigers to use their logo, so he's just got that random hat, you know, with just the nothing on it.
Like the Beltron Fire.
Like the Beltron Fire. Yes, exactly what I was thinking of.
Or the airbrushed cards you got in cereal boxes.
Yes. So we'll pretend that for a second. But anyway, the other day he tweets out, you know, the All-Star game should be the best players and not the people who can vote the most. Something to that effect. And I was just like, so I tweeted with a comment about David Price, where I was just like, I think David Price is confusing what should be with what actually is. Oh, no, he said it's not a popularity contest. That's what he said. And so I said, right. I think it's confusing what the All-Star Game should be with what it actually is, because it is 100% a popularity contest. Just ask Derek Jeter, who has about 5 or 6 All-Star Games on his resume that never should have happened.
Or at least starts.
At least starts. We'll put it that. That's valid. But this idea that, you know, there's some sanctity to the All-Star Game, you know, it's never been sanctified. The fact that it was so meaningless for so long that one game ended in a tie and they had to make up this dumb, stupid-ass rule about home field advantage in the World Series just to get people to actually care. And the players still don't care. And the players are mad about the fact. I guarantee this changes. But what's really interesting and what I think is cool is why, like I was saying earlier, I can get behind hashtag Vote Omar movement, is this idea that if the Royals truly do hold pat on this and have 8 starters in the All-Star Game, besides the sheer awesomeness of the spectacle from a Kansas City, it will force the MLB to make changes to the process somehow, whether it's the voting process, whether it's how much the fan votes actually count, you know, whatever the case may be, they're going to make some changes. And because of that, it's going to be the Royals. It's always going to be the Royal rule, and people are going to reference that. And 10 years from now, when the system's all screwed up again, and people are, I wish the fans could vote. Stupid Royals cost us all the
right.
Like when
there's precedent for it, where the Reds in 57 had I think it was 8 got, or they had 7 of their players got starting spots. The last guy was Stan Musial, but the Major League front office, or you know, MLB stepped in and replaced 2 of those guys with Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, who you know probably deserve to be there, I guess.
There.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just like that's you know, that's a system, and Royals fans are just voting within the system. It's tough to get angry at people just for doing what they can. So I it's just kind of ridiculous, but it is something that, like, the game was always an exhibition. It's still an exhibition, and it shouldn't have any bearing on anything that happens in the World Series. It should basically be an exhibition of some of the best players, and some years there are guys who aren't that good. And if it is supposed to be truly the best, then why are you taking a representative from every team? You know, I mean, there are some years where the Royals sure as heck didn't have a guy to contribute as the best in the league. You know, Mark Redman and Ken Harvey come to mind. I mean, those were not all-star caliber players, but the Royals had to have a representative.
Mike McDougal. You can't, although actually that year he actually earned
McDougal
it.
McDougal was good that year.
That was a good first half.
One of like 2 good years he ever had.
But yeah, you can't have it both ways. You can't have, oh, this is an event for the fans. We want the fans to be involved. We want their input. This keeps them engaged during the break. Everything's great. You can't have that. And then on the other hand, have this actually matters. And because it's just the nature of it is, you know, if fans made the rules, like I've talked about before, all the changes I'd like to make to baseball, you know, if fans made the rules, it'd be a completely different game. So you can't have it both ways. It's either a completely ridiculous NBA All-Star Game level event where it's just people aren't out there really trying and the fans are just to see who they want, do something crazy, and that's that. Or you do really get the best players and they're out there managing and playing to win the game, which means that not all players might play,
right,
and that's okay, but they still get to put All-Star on their resume. And, you know, it's you need to pick one, because right now you're sitting on the fence, MLB, and it looks stupid. It's a bad look when the Royals are going to start 8 players. We obviously think it's awesome, but from a national perspective, it's absolutely a bad look. You think people in New York are going to turn into the All-Star Game when it's 8 Royals and Mike Trout to start? You know, I mean, they're going to lose a ton of huge, and that's why they kind of let that stuff slide, because if Derek Jeter was starting, they were going to get a lot of views, a lot of votes, all kinds of stuff from New York. But if it's 8 Royals and Mike Trout, those people are going to be less inclined to tune in. They're going to be less inclined to care, and I mean, I think it's fantastic. I would think it's fantastic if another team was doing it, simply because I think the whole idea of voting for this crap is absurd and needs to be changed. So hopefully, again, this will be the one to change it, and it'll be known as the Royal Rule forever, and it'll be awesome.
And if nothing else, they might have 8 guys on the All-Star team.
Yeah, we talked about it
last
time.
What would that look like? I don't even get, like, the introductions alone would be crazy. It's just like, okay, there's another Royal. It's absurd.
Because it's not like, you know, in the NFL, when they have the Pro Bowl, they have special jerseys made for the AFC and the NFC and everything. So everybody, even if you have a bunch of people from one team, they still all look the same because they've got just different helmets.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do that in Major League Baseball. You know, you just wear the regular jerseys, right?
Right.
Because they have the American National League ones for the Home Run Derby. That's what.
Yeah, for like the workout days.
All the exhibition stuff. Yeah. But yeah, the regular stuff, you just wear your regular jersey. So it'll just look like a Royals home game. If only this was 2012, how amazing would it have been?
That would be nuts.
Eight Royals in Royals Stadium? Oh, man. The crowd would have – you would have never heard Joe Buck say a word because it would have just been huge thunderous applause.
Royals going crazy.
For 15 minutes straight.
The one thing that like – doesn't hold water for me either, and the complaints about all this is that, well, you want the best players in the game, and da, da, da. Well, here's the deal. The Royals are in first place in their division. They have the best winning percentage still, I believe, in the American League.
Yes.
So, I mean, it would follow that if you have 8 players from that team, and they're the best team in your league, I mean, yeah, individually they are not the best, but their team is playing the best, at least record-wise. So it's not like this is, you know, 8 guys from the Brewers going out there because the Milwaukee got bored and voted a lot. It's, you know, guys that I think nationally a lot of these guys caught people's attention. You know, more people learned about Lorenzo Cain. They kind of know Hosmer, who's been out there on, like, MLB The Show, and he's always the guy that they talk to on the offseason.
He's the face.
He's the face of the franchise, and Escobar has had like a month of you know, highlight reel plays, and Gordon's always got highlights, and Moustakas is a prospect name that people know, and so he's really easy to kind of recognize, and Sal Perez has huge following online on Instagram and Twitter, and just like, you know, a playoff run brings them into attention, and, you know, more casual fans might vote for some of those guys because they kind of like them. Yeah. Or you also get, you know, early in the voting fans who are like, well, yeah, they're having a good year. And at, you know, in April, if you were doing any voting, well, yeah, you're going to vote for some Royals because a lot of those guys were hitting the crap out of the ball. And so it just doesn't make any sense to be like, well, you need to have the best. The other thing is that like these guys might play 3 innings maybe, you know, with probably 1 or 2 ace pitchers on the mound. So I just don't really see why, like, where the problem is. I mean, Cabrera is going to make it into the game. Adam Jones will make it into the game.
Yeah,
will make it into the game. You know, it's just like it's not that big of a deal. I think the Royals could accidentally score some runs in 3 innings off. You know, just at random, just because it's baseball and randomness happens. So, you know, it's not like people are chalking it up like the Royals are going to play the full game and will clearly lose. And then there goes home field advantage. And it's just like, no, just the Royals can win games. Maybe they'll get shut out in 3 innings one time through the lineup. But, you know, you have 2/3 of the game for everybody else to come in.
Yeah, and that was one of my favorite arguments. Like, oh, well, this could be the biggest crap if Eric Hosmer causes Miguel Cabrera not to be in the game. It's like, you honestly gonna tell me that there is some way under this earth or on this earth that Miguel Cabrera doesn't make the All-Star game? No, it's gonna happen. You know, I mean, if Hosmer gets voted in as a starter, then Cabrera is going to get the unanimous player vote to get in. And even if for some ungodly reason he didn't get that, Ned Yost sees him all the time across the dugout, and he would put him on the team. So there's no way Miguel Cabrera is not going to make the All-Star team. And same for a lot of those other players. You know, it does, you know, it does kind of edge some other players out probably that, you know, might have had a better chance. But the real premier players that quote unquote should make it based on skill, they're going to be in the game still. And to your point, with the exception of Infante and Rios, right. And Rios isn't starting, but the other seven starters, at the very least, are in the conversation for being. I mean, Escobar's been a borderline all-star for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Lorenzo Cain has been playing out of his mind, you know, ever since last August, and he deserves it to be in that discussion. Eric Hosmer, you know, he might be the team MVP so far this season. He deserves to be in a discussion. Sal Perez started last year again. He was, you know, wasn't actually elected the starter, but you know, the changing of the guard was coming. Gordon's been doing what he's been doing for years. You know, Moose has had just a fantastic first season, and or first half of the season, not first season. So you know, they definitely should be in the discussion. All of them are definitely worthy of it. It's just a matter of should they all be starting? Probably not. Yeah. But until the rules change, we're going to do what we do because we're Royals fans and we will not be denied.
And it's just what we do. It's like you have Alex Gordon's web gem from Chicago was like 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, and it's still number one, still the reigning web gem. There was some other retweet favorite poll thing, and the Royals won that. And it's just like, I mean, Royals fans online, they get behind it. And, you know, I guess that's what's probably surprising is that the support has been this big.
Yeah, and again, it's so awesome that, you know, we've been saying it for years, and we used to have that clip of me saying it in the opening of the show where I'd say when I was growing up, you know, my dad would always be like, you know, this is a baseball town. You've never seen it, Jeff, but you know, it's a baseball town. And if the Royals ever get good, you'll see it. And hey, man, we're seeing it. We're living it. And it is, I mean, ownership put their money where their mouth is, and so have the fans. And it's so awesome to see that kind of symbiotic relationship finally pay off some dividends. Ownership has invested in the team. They've invested in us as fans, and we've paid it back by investing in them as a team with our dollars and our time and our effort. And, like, this is how it should be, and it's totally awesome.
Right.
And,
it's about time.
Yeah, right? God. You know, something I was hearing on the radio, and this wasn't really a topic we were going to go over, but I'm going to bring it up because we do whatever the hell we want on this show. But something I was hearing
in
on the
chaos.
Radio.
Chaos.
Something I was hearing on the radio on the way home. it was like Keatsman, I think. I was talking about how, you know, everything's going so well right now, you know, over the last 18 months or so for the Royals. And I'm talking about Dayton Moore and Ned Yost. And he brought it up because going back to Milwaukee tonight, as we're recording this on Monday night, so they're starting off their. Not a four-game set with the Brewers, but four games in a row, two in Milwaukee, two in KC. But Ned Yost going back to Milwaukee after getting fired in 2008, just a couple weeks away from clinching a playoff spot, and because he wasn't getting the results, blah, 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 and then comes to Kansas City, gets off to a rocky start, but makes it happen, not only gets his team to the playoffs like Milwaukee thought he couldn't, but then gets to the World Series, like Milwaukee couldn't at all. And, you know, he's got the AL pennant. He's got everything, you know, really going well for them right now. And the Brewers are in a really, really bad spot.
Yeah.
Not to mention two of the key components of all of the success Ned Yost has had are two players that were from the Brewers organization that they spent the majority of the time developing. For Zach Greinke, who they had for a year and a half, who they traded, and they got a pretty good player it was John Segura, right, that they got from him?
They got him the Helweg guy.
Helweg, that's right. So, I mean, they got some decent players, but, you know, ultimately, you know, I'm sure they probably think, oh, I mean, they also gave up Jake Odorizzi, who's not on the Royals, but he's doing really well for Tampa, and the Royals used him to get James Shields. So, I mean, you'd think if you were the Brewers, Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, and Jake Odorizzi would probably look pretty good in blue and gold or whatever the hell their colors are now. you know, like if I was a Brewers fan, I'd probably be like, man, that'd be sure nice to have those three players. But, you know, if you go for broke, and that's what happens. Because the Royals are going to, you know, if the Royals kind of tank it in the next couple of years, they'll probably say the same thing about Jake Odorizzi and Will Myers and whoever else. But
yep.
Anyway, something that it's just kind of an interesting thought to go down that road and kind of think back. And I was thinking of all the stuff and just our show because, we started this in 2011 and it was, you know, things were kind of starting to tick up maybe, but it was still bad. and it was actually, did we 2011 or 2010? It's 2011.
It was 2011, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anyway,
so and which was
they went
just after all of this. It was just a few months. It was March 2011 yeah. we started, which was 3 months after this trade.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hadn't come aboard yet, but so anyway, but remember when, you know, I mean, trust the process was a joke.
It was a joke.
That phrase was a complete and utter joke. Not only just with us on this show, but on the radio, in the blogs, in the newspaper, all that stuff. And, you know, now it's worked. And it's trust the process is it's a mantra, not a punchline.
Yeah, it's real thing.
Yeah, and it's but then when I think about that, I'm like, well, that's not really fair, because that's not. Everything happened kind of like Dayton Moore and Ned Yost wanted it to, but not how they wanted it to. You know, so they kind of lucked into some things working out that maybe shouldn't have. But, you know, like Lorenzo Cain, I think they thought he could be an everyday player, but the player that he's turned into, I don't think they anticipated that. You know, so that kind of thing is luck. But good organizations foster that kind of stuff, allow that to happen. Look at the Cardinals.
Right.
But just that. It's interesting because with all the success and people talking about the actual team, they don't really talk about the other things going on around the team like we have in the past. And, you know, I think I've probably been the most outspoken, but just all of us who have been a part of this show have all kind of been pretty outspoken about the Royals developmental system and all the issues that they've had and why can't they develop players and all that stuff. And, you know, now they have. And I think that one thing that's been lost that the Royals will have to get credit for is a lot of the things that we were saying that were issues with the organizations are, like, I'm not trying to take credit for any of this, but there are a lot of the things that the Royals recognized were issues, even though they were stubborn for a very long time. They got to the point they recognized they were issues, and they've kind of silently made quite a few changes about their lower minor structure, how they develop players, different methods and different training programs that they use. And I think it's starting to pay dividends. I mean, that's something that it's, I definitely think it's kind of gotten lost, but you know, you have to give credit where it's due. And I do think that just from what we've heard from people we've talked to, and just from what we can see with our eyes, I think they've made a lot of changes that have been very positive for the organization.
Yeah. They've made adjustments, and that's, you know, when you start out and you have an idea, everybody's going to be homegrown. You know, I think the core idea behind what Dayton Moore wanted to do was probably the right idea for this kind of a market. But there was also always that kind of feeling that, you know, if you invest in this team and you get in better players, maybe your payroll's higher than what you're comfortable with, but you will get it paid back. And it's like you said now, I mean, Royals are going to break their attendance record. They're getting, you know, the best ratings in baseball, as far as local television, you know, just all kinds of support throughout the entire city. And pretty much a lot of those guys who might've migrated to be Twins or Rangers or Rockies fans are now coming back to the Royals. So you've got a fan base that's growing back up to what it used to be back in, you know, the 80s, 70s and 80s, you know, it's like a new generation. And some of that has to do because the Royals did make changes and they took some gambles. And, you know, we talked to Mike Groopman a couple weeks ago, and he, you know, talked about the development of their analytics, which the Royals used to be notoriously anti and heavily like old school and very slanted towards, you know, that kind of mentality. Long toss, they've kind of worked around. They found kind of the cracks in the system for the draft, and, you know, they have still kind of managed to find what little advantages they can. They've developed in Latin America well more than they ever did in the
70s. That was one of the
80s.
Biggest things Dayton Moore should always get credit for, that he is sorely overlooked by a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's huge. I mean, that's, you know, their Latin American program is so productive for them now, whereas before, you know, it was almost non-existent.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through that break. Now, well, we talked a little bit about the All-Star game and, you know, some of the success that the Royals have had and how everything's going pretty well right now. But, you know, record-wise, it seems like everything's going pretty well. But there is a little turmoil on the team, not anything, you know, superficial or off the field, but just in terms of, you know, the pitching staff is not having the success that the team needs it to have. They've been able to overcome because they've got some very clutch starts from, you know, when they needed a really big start. Edison Volquez usually happens to be the guy. Jeremy Guthrie has had some pretty big starts when he's, you know, it's really been needed from him. And Chris Young, of course, has been basically the hero of the staff at this point, mm-hmm. because who the hell knows what's happening to Yordano Ventura. I don't know if it's necessarily clear whether it's a mental issue or whether it's just a physical thing. They left the last game with his last start with right hand numbness. Yeah. Can't feel anything in his right hand, apparently. And then later they said there was some fluid around the ulnar collateral ligament. Now, typically, anytime I hear UCL mentioned, you know, it's like I'm a vampire or something and it's garlic, but you know, it doesn't appear to be a precursor to Tom. I've never heard of this, really. Like I've researched a lot about pitching and pitching injuries, and I don't know that I've ever heard about fluid around the UCL. I don't know what that means. It sounds like a half truth that many training staffs say, for kind of like maybe there's a little something there, but more or less it's just kind of an excuse for whatever reason, and he's just expected to miss his or to make his next start, so maybe kind of planting the seeds so that if things continue to go poorly, they can put him on the DL. You know, I mean, I'm not altogether convinced that isn't what they did with Duffy earlier, right, since he was struggling so much, and I feel like they maybe have done that before with Duffy. And it's not a bad thing to do. You know, it's protecting the player so they don't have to send him down to AAA. They don't have to say, hey, he's not performing. They can just say, hey,
it's a rehab assignment.
It's a rehab assignment. We're just making sure he can handle the health thing, all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I don't know. I'm not – that's just speculation, pure speculation on my part, but yeah, I mean,
the fluid part, I'm not in sports medicine, so I don't know what that points to, but if it's causing numbness, that can't be good. There's maybe some pressure on a nerve, I guess. I didn't see if they needed to drain the fluid or if it just dissipated on its own. But I mean, it is still scary. I mean, anytime there's any kind of arm issue with a pitcher, I mean, it's not good.
No.
And when you look at his start before, you know, he had went only three innings, threw a ton of pitches, didn't look sharp at all. Sounded like he was doing better against the Cardinals. They kind of got like three hits in a row in like 30 seconds off him. And other than that, he seemed to be doing pretty well. I was listening on the radio when I was driving around, so I kind of heard a little bit of it, but
that's kind of his MO this season. Other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln type of a type of a game,
right?
Which it's always seems to be. He just has that kind of one bad inning, and then he's fighting his way back.
He's usually okay. So I don't know. They bumped him back a couple days. Joe Blanton's going to make a start. I guess that's in Vargas's spot, because Vargas went back on the DL with an elbow problem, which he already had kind of an elbow problem, so that's not a good thing either. But he'd looked better since he came back, so I mean, I don't know if it's just soreness. There was some talk yesterday during the rain delay. I was listening to Ryan LaFever, and he was talking about how, you know, you see something, Ventura comes into a National League park, has to hit, you know, it's out of his routine. Vargas has to hit, has to prepare to hit. And that, you know, is that a change in his routine? So is that something to it, or is it that just his speculation? I don't know. But, I mean, it's intriguing. It's, you know, it kind of makes sense. The Royals have seen Luke Hochaver have the same kind of issue a couple years ago. I think they were taking BP in Fenway because their next series was going to be in St. Louis, or they were going to be in, maybe they were going to be against the Mets or something. And he had some kind of a slight injury because of, you know, the batting practice that he had to do. So I don't know if that's part of it, or this is just happens to be the timing that they're in a stretch of some NL games. But that's, I mean, that's not something you want to see, especially when you've already got Guthrie, who's been lit up plenty. You have Young, who can't, I don't see a way he can go 200 innings. And then you have Volquez, who's been very good other than like two starts, but he's also kind of hits that point where the sixth inning he gets a little shaky. You know, you really want to see him be able to go seven with relative ease. So, you know, it's a pretty shaky rotation. And again, if Joe Blanton is the guy that steps up, that's not ideal. I mean, he's pitched well since he's been up, but I mean, it does kind of give you this kind of pause about like the pitching depth that the Royals have. Duffy, I think, has like maybe one or two more rehab starts to go, and then he'll probably be ready to come back up, and then we'll kind of see from there. That would really strengthen things. Especially if, you know, Vargas is out for an extended period of time. If Blanton can hold it down, then I guess the Royals would just be this kind of magical team where you have Guthrie, Young, and Blanton all, you know, late 30s just doing things. But, I mean, obviously you want to see Ventura and Duffy be the central points, but they haven't performed to be that. It's been Young and Volquez, and then half of Guthrie starts, and try to forget the other half of Guthrie's start.
Yeah, and you know, it's something I think that's important to kind of put into context Yordano Ventura a little bit. I mean, he's still really young for, I mean, he's 24. And I wouldn't say really young, but he's still young. You know, he's still early in his career. And there have been a lot of comparisons to Johnny Cueto. And, you know, you have, you know, they have similar backgrounds, similar pitching style, very kind of hard throwers, if you will. And, I mean, if you go back and look at Cueto when he came up in his first couple of years, you know, he wasn't even as good as Ventura. You know, he definitely wasn't as good at his rookie year as Ventura was last year. But then even his second year, he still struggled a bit. And I just pulled up some game logs just to kind of see what kind of, you know, if he had similar struggles. And looking in 2009 here, which was his second full year in the majors, I mean, he had a stretch of eight games here where he gave up runs of 9, 4, 3, 4, 6, 5, 1, 7, all in his, you know, eight consecutive starts. That's a couple months worth of just, you know, poor, I guess a month worth of kind of poor starts. And so it's something where he did so well last year, Ventura, and so well in the playoffs and the World Series, and everyone was expecting him to kind of take that leap and be that superstar stud pitcher, and myself included. You know, I got caught up in the hype and everything, but, you know, it's important to remember that he's still kind of learning how to pitch. and there's still a lot of stuff for him to learn. So just hopefully it's something that, and I think it's been tough for him to deal with some of the fact that he did so well last year, and it hasn't been going as well this year, and that's kind of been tough for him to reconcile. You know, like, I'm doing the same things. What should I, you know, why isn't it working? I can definitely see how that would be frustrating. So the Royals, I think, need to find a way to kind of help him deal with that and overcome, and I think that's what they're trying to do. So hopefully that'll work out. But, you know, that's one of the things that I can point to and say, I don't know how much it'll help this season. I don't know how, you know, hopefully he gets better this season, but that's something I can say at least for the future. I'm not super concerned about Yordano Ventura, but I can't really say that about the rest of the staff, and, you know, Danny Duffy included, because, you know, if this was Danny Duffy's rookie year and this kind of stuff was happening, you'd be like, okay, you know, he's got a lot to learn, but this is a repeated phenomena that we've seen from Duffy in terms of, you know, high pitch counts, losing control, getting too frustrated, not being able to control his emotions, having it affect his performance. And, you know, it seems like for all the time that he's been healthy, he's battled those issues. So, you know, while I know the talent is there, I don't know how confident I am that the Royals and Danny Duffy can corral all that for an extended period of time, you know, beyond just a few months, which really, that's more or less what last year was for him, was just kind of a few really good months.
Yeah, it was about 4 months. I think it was like mid-May when he rejoined the rotation. And that was even after, you know, he started out last year as a reliever and was lights out for about five appearances. And then he had like three in a row where he was just really off. And then just ended up, I believe did they send him to Omaha? I have to.
Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm.
To kind of get him stretched out a bit because they knew he was going to be getting into the rotation. And then once he hit it, you know, it was smooth sailing. He was, you know, he was solid pretty much all year. But this year, if it is a shoulder problem, and if it is some physical thing that is making his command, you know, as spotty as we've seen it in a couple of those starts before, well, then that's okay. But if it is everything else, then that's a whole other matter. You know, it's just, and sometimes it just happens. You know, it's a difficult game, and to get everything going in the right direction at the same time, it's tough. And I think that's kind of what Duffy and Ventura are both running into. And Ventura might even be like, you know, he signed the extension before the season. You know, he's got a lot of expectations on him. Maybe he's putting too much on himself. It's a reminder that these guys are humans doing a job, even though it's a game. So I don't know if that's something that's coming into play too, where he's really got to try to, you know, he's wanting to do well, but he's trying too hard to do well, and in the process he's making it difficult instead of just going out there and doing what got him there and just throwing it. You know, in both cases, Ventura and Duffy, it seems like there might be some kind of internal pressure between the two, even though Duffy is more typical. You know, we see him being more demonstrative on the mound and talking about these things. Ventura, you can tell, I mean, just, you know, seeing some of the leg kicks and things like that, it's not like he's not expressive. He just isn't someone who shows his frustrations unless it's Adam Eaton.
Yeah, and
or Mike Trout.
And it seems more so than frustration for Ventura. He kind of pouts. It seems like you can kind of feel like with his body language, you know, he just kind of is up there like, you know, whatever, I'm just going to throw. And it just, you know, that's just obviously my observation. I'm not necessarily, you know, saying that's how he is, but that's what it kind of looks like. And I've, you know, you hear that sentiment kind of echoed from, I've heard at least from different radio personalities and whatnot. So, you know, you just got to hope that it's something that over time he learns to, both he and Duffy, kind of mature emotionally to where they can handle that. Because I think that a little bit goes back to the loss of James Shields, just because James Shields was as fiery a competitor and pitcher as you're going to see. But what made him, I think, so successful is his ability to channel his emotions was beyond probably any pitcher I've ever seen, just to be able to do it so well. That, you know, I mean, you see him, he'd give up a home run or he'd give up a bad hit in a bad situation, and he'd turn around and he'd put his glove over his mouth and you could tell he would just yell and cuss and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that was it.
Boom.
He turned around and he was back ready to go.
And he makes his pitch. And,
you know, it's kind of like that football cornerback mentality. You know, you're going to get burned if you're a cornerback because it's what's going to happen. You just need to deal with it. But the ones that are successful are able to get burned and turn around and then make an interception or you know, bat a ball down on the next play. So that's the kind of the similar mentality that you need to have. You're going to give up home runs. It's going to happen. But can you turn around and channel that frustration or anger into a positive emotion or a positive, you know, that you can use towards getting the next pitcher or next hitter out?
Yep. And so, you know, if those guys can bounce back, then the Royals are, you feel in pretty good shape. You know, they've got,
yeah, you
got
to think
guys.
So.
If they can't, then I don't know. I mean,
I don't know what the answers are.
You start, I mean, there's, if they're in it, I think they already can tell that like second base and starting pitching is going to, I mean, contenders are always looking for starting pitching. So,
right.
I mean, I haven't really thought too much about this, but like Johnny Cueto is like the prize of the trade targets out there, free agent next year. So that's one guy. You know, Aaron Harang is out there. You know, nothing flashy there, but I think he'd be able to get you through about six innings any game. You know, the other,
you can just get someone to give you what Chris Young's been giving you.
Yeah, because I don't think you're going to be able to see. I don't think he's going to be able to make 25 starts in this year. It's just his background has not shown that he can do that. He's had so many injuries over the years. And last year he really kind of faltered later in the year as the innings piled up. And so I think they have to kind of understand that they're not going to have him as available. They might have to be skipping starts on him or, you know, toss him back in the bullpen for a little bit, especially if they do go get another pitcher somewhere down the line. I mean, we're in the middle of June, so the trade deadline's 6 weeks away. The first big trade last year happened on the 4th of July, so I mean, you might see in 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks that the Royals are starting to make a move and, you know, bringing in new guys. So I don't know, that wouldn't be a Cueto kind of thing. I think that's going to be your typical kind of deadline deal. But I think there could be guys out there that, you know, the Royals could bring in, you know, with potential to fill in the rotation, especially if there is prolonged absence from Jason Vargas or if Duffy's, you know, still not showing progress on getting back to where he was last year, or if Ventura keeps having these fluke injuries that, you know, are a bigger thing somewhere else. And I think they're for certain probably going to be getting at least one new starter sometime in the next 6 weeks. I think it's too much of an opportunity for them to stay in first this deep into the season and not try to, you know, get more depth and more, you know, impact players,
right,
for such an important spot, especially when they have a lot of this kind of turnover within the season because of injuries and other issues. So
yeah, it's just going to be a matter of what are they comfortable giving up for what they're getting, you know. And I think a good cautionary tale is the A's from last year. You know, they were hands down the best team in the league, and they were running away with it. They were, what, 40 games over 500 at one point? They were like 64-24 or something. I mean, they were just killing it. And they made a trade, and I honestly thought at the time that Billy Beane was betting on the fact that they had such a big lead and they were doing so well that they could, even if they faltered a little bit, they could carry into the playoffs, but that they were setting themselves up by getting more pitching instead of hitting to do well in the playoffs because they wanted to do what the Royals did.
Yeah.
But they got out Royals by the Royals. So, you know, that's definitely a cautionary tale because now you look at the A's and they're not doing very well, and they lost a lot of their good players because they made these trades. They gave away Yoenis Cespedes to try and get or to get John Lester. You know, they gave away who did they trade for Samardzija?
Addison Russell.
Addison Russell, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, and both those players would be helping out the, I guess Cespedes, never mind. He was a free agent, right? At the end of the year?
No, he got traded again. So
okay, because I knew
the
Red Sox
traded him to Detroit.
I knew he
or, yeah.
I couldn't remember how he got to Detroit, so that makes sense. But anyway, so I guess they would have had Cespedes, but those two would have looked a lot better in A's uniforms right now. I'm probably helping this team more, but they went for broke, and you know, now they are where they are.
Yeah. But the Royals don't really have that, I guess, concern, because I mean it's going to be a dogfight, I think, all year. You know, right now they're 9 games above 500. I have a desktop from that night where they beat the A's to take first place back in August, or my desktop wallpaper. It's the Sungwoo on top of the Hall of Fame with the W thing.
Oh, nice.
And it's got the team's records in the corner of it. And in the corner, the Royals were 64-53 after that win. And that's in the middle of August, you know, to take first place in the division. So, I mean,
and the American League, you know, and the American Central especially, are worse this year than they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 90 wins. I mean, I think Detroit won it last year, won the division with 90 wins last year.
Yes.
So, I mean, the Royals can do the same. Detroit hasn't been that good all year. Cleveland was really rough early. Chicago's way down. You know, Chicago's not looking good. Minnesota is a pretty clear fluke to just about anybody, even Minnesota, I think. So you're looking at a division that is not easily winnable, but I mean, you've got three teams that are probably going to be in there the whole time. Chicago might make a run of it, and Minnesota still has to fade away. So you've got,
and just the point that the Royals went 2-9 on an 11-game stretch, and they're still in first place by a game and a half.
Right. So I mean, it's not as scary of a division. But it's still the same thing. I mean, it could just as easily be that they end up at 64-53 and are in first place again this year. It's just that kind of a year so far. So, you know, if that difference is something where, okay, you know, they do need to get that other pitcher, or they, you know, have to do something, I don't think they'll hesitate to trade a minor league guy, but I think it's going to be hard-pressed to see them do anything with their big league guys.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what they do. They've got a lot of options, and you know, you don't want to take that risk of screwing up the good stuff that you already have. But mm-hmm. if they can make a move, and it's a move they can stomach, then I don't hesitate. I don't think they'll hesitate to make it.
No,
excuse me. It's just a matter of if they can stomach it or not.
I mean, their most elite prospect that they have right now is Raul Mondesi, and everybody else kind of has some kind of issue that, you know, makes them, I guess, in a way expendable. I mean, guys like Zimmer, who's kind of coming back, and Minaya, who, you know, has a lot of potential. You know, those are guys that you wouldn't want to give up, but I think if the Royals really had
you could live with it.
You could deal with it. I mean, they have some pretty good pitching depth now that they've kind of built up.
I mean, if you could get away with keeping Mondesi and giving away one of Zimmer or Minaya and maybe a couple other players and get back to somebody like Cueto or something. I mean, I think he'll probably take more than that, but you'd have to do it because you could keep the major league team intact, add one of the top 10 pitchers probably in all of baseball, and really set yourself up for some good things to happen.
Yeah, and it's one of the – it's, you know, the kind of year where you're already kind of looking at it. Alex Gordon is going to be – probably a free agent unless they get something put together contract wise. And then you're looking at 2016 and 2017. And those are the last years that Moustakas and Hosmer are going to be under team control. So, I mean, even though the Royals had the success of 2013 to kind of be a winner again, and last year made the World Series, and this year they're in first place, like, that window is already, you know, the tunnels, you can already see the end of it. You know, you can see that light, and, you know, they've got to be ready to make the next move. They don't want to sell out the farm system, but if it means that it puts them in position for this year to really put a hold on the division, get that divisional series set up, you know, Cueto, Ventura, Duffy as your rotation, and carry on in the ALCS and kind of go finish the job that they didn't do last year. Well, then, yeah, I think that's worth trading a guy, you know, a couple guys from your top 10.
Which flags fly forever.
That's true, and it's you know, it's like I remember back in like 2011 and before the Shields trade. I mean, the attitude was a lot different because you kind of felt like, okay, you want to keep these guys, and then, you know, yeah, you can go get that one guy, but if it doesn't work, then you've already given up these three guys who could turn into something. But at the same time, it's like, well, you know, they are just prospects. I mean, it's the experience of watching a team, for me, has kind of flipped it a little bit. I mean, I still wouldn't say, like, okay, send, you know, Manaea, Zimmer, Almonte, and Mondesi on the same charter bus to Cincinnati. You know, I don't do that. But, you know, if you do have to trade off some prospects and you can get real good quality major leaguers, then, yeah, I mean, why would you not do that? And I think Absolutely. That's something to kind of look at.
Yeah, so with that, I think we've saved the most important topic for last.
Clearly.
Something that, you know, I think for those of you out there who follow us on Twitter, it's very serious.
And it's very important that we discuss it here.
Absolutely.
And give it the weight that it deserves.
Yes. Mike, have you seen Pitch Perfect 2?
I have. I saw it the Thursday night when it opened, and it was fun.
It was most definitely fun.
I can't say, like, my feeling leaving it was like it was still funny. It didn't get carried away like I was kind of worried it would.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't quite the same as the first movie. Like, I'm not sure when or how it even happened, but Pitch Perfect kind of became the unofficial Royals Twitter movie. Not quite so much in the last, I don't know, year and a half or so, but, you know, for some of those miserable games where, you know, people, you know, 2013 were, all right, especially in, like, May, you know, okay, hey, let's cheer up and watch, you know.
Pitch Perfect's on HBO.
Right, and let's, you know, people end up live-tweeting it at the same time, and it's like that really kind of, you know, I guess is where it came from. But that one, you know, the first one had its charm. It kind of was taking a chance on a weird topic with kind of a quirky, weird cast and everything. And this one was kind of aware that it was a weird topic.
It was very self-aware.
Yeah,
yes.
And so that changed kind of the way that they did it. And, you know, some stuff fell flat, like the announcers were not nearly as good as they were in the first one, because the first one, it was almost like a Second City or a Chris Guest,
like,
kind of
like a Best in Show type of thing.
Yeah, it was something kind of like that, where it's like
the same
okay
guy.
Well, yeah, it is, yeah. And so it kind of felt like, okay, you know, this is it's playing off of that kind of thing. And in the second one, it was kind of like, all right, let's try to, you know, continue to be really, really offensive and weird and inappropriate. And it just, that part didn't work for me. There were some characters that they didn't really need. I mean, the Latina, where was she? Was she Cuban? I don't remember who the character
was. Because she kept joking about,
not
living very long.
Yeah, and there's just like
sort of like weirdly offensive jokes about Cuban
people. That character literally did nothing but that, and it was like, I don't know why she was in there other than to just be another character, which I don't think they need, because it's already such a big group.
Yeah,
and like you've got the two fringe characters who always get mixed up for each other, who I don't even know their names, and I've seen the movie a billion times. The first one.
Yeah, and they even joke about the fact that they couldn't tell them apart.
Right, and it's like, it's not like they even look alike. It's just that they're so very extraneous characters that, you know, so why do you need to add another one? You know, so that didn't work for me.
I think part of it was they had to introduce some characters, because if they're going to keep the series going, there needs to be kind of fresh faces that, you know, when Anna Kendrick gets too big, and when Rebel Wilson gets too big to do another Pitch Perfect, and they can say, oh, well, we'll just bring in the funny Cuban lady.
Yeah, and Brittany Snow's already like, well, I mean, Anna Kendrick's like 30 years old, and Brittany Snow is, if she's not the same age, she looks a little older.
Yeah.
And it's like, they can't keep playing. I mean, and they've all graduated in the movie.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. So it's going to end up going into that kind of direction, probably, that they've got a third one in line.
Yeah.
It's probably going to end up going into kind of that American Pie thing where you start to kind of get in, and it's more of like a franchise with spinoffs than it is a continuation of the same stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Which I don't know how I'm going to like that, but
We'll see how that works. But, you know, for me, I think there were more laugh out loud funny moments than the first one, but it wasn't quite as good overall.
It wasn't as charming.
No. And I think part of it is, you know, the first one, like, you know, part of the whole, like,
It wasn't out in theaters that long, the first one.
It wasn't. It really caught fire on DVD.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of it, because part of that whole acapella thing is kind of the rawness of just singing with your voice and making all the sounds and everything. And the second one, it just felt a little too produced for me, because it didn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't as plausible that all these people were making all these sounds and doing everything completely acapella. It seemed a little more produced to me. But that said, like, I had a blast watching it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was funny. And, you know, nothing wrong with some good acapella music, you know?
No, I mean, it was entertaining. I mean, they did kind of the same kind of riff off thing, which was pretty good.
That was a good scene. Green Bay Packers were present. I heard that the Green Bay Packers, basically, just like Royals Twitter, kind of latched onto that movie for whatever reason, and they begged to be in the second one, and that's why they were in that scene.
That's hilarious. That's a weird team. The Packers, they also, like, I think they play Settlers of Catan on the road as well.
Yeah, they're definitely very Royals-like in their kind of niche-y behavior.
The one thing, like, there was, when you say, like, laugh out loud moments, the one, like, I literally, like, laughed, like, out loud in the whole theater, and it was, they're doing, like, the camp out kind of thing to reconnect and everything, and they start singing Natalie Imbruglia's Torn.
Oh, yep.
And Cynthia Rose, I don't know, should I ruin the line? Yeah. Well, no. No, she says it. Now, you need to see Pitch Perfect, too. I'm not going to ruin it, because I can't.
Yeah.
The way she delivers it and in the way that it's played, it's just, like, it's hilarious. Like, I thought that was the funniest part right there. It was just, yeah. But, I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it. I would watch it again. I don't think I could watch it continually like
the first one.
Like the first one, where the first one is, like, you know, I don't know, is there like a phrase or a term for that kind of movie that you just put on as like background?
My mom always calls them cable movies. Like Vegas Vacation for me is a perfect one. Like, I don't know if I would have paid money to see that in the theater, because it's definitely no Christmas Vacation. But if it's on, I always stop and then just put it on, and then I'll do whatever. If I'm cleaning the house or, you know, whatever, I'll scroll on the internet, but it's on in the background because, you know, I know when to check in for the funny parts and whatnot.
Yeah, and like Mean Girls has been on TV a lot, and I for the some reason last like month I've seen Mean Girls on TV like three different times. It's like, okay, I mean, you know, there's not much to that one either. It's just like, okay, I'll watch this.
Yep,
it's just on. So I don't know. And Pitch Perfect, the first one works really well for that. The second one, I don't know if it would work that well. I mean, it's. It was worth going to the theaters for it. For me, especially as someone who doesn't, you know, really go to movies that often, but
right.
It wouldn't be one that I would go see again in the theaters. I would probably, if I could get like a download of it for like $8, I'd probably go ahead and do it just to have it around, you know, for some of the, you know, Saturday night when I'm bored at home. Okay, I'll just
toss it on. Yeah.
Right. But that's about, you know, it's not quite the same, but
no,
it was still good and
worth seeing.
It was worth seeing. Yeah. I would recommend it, especially if you liked the first one. I don't think you would hate the second one to the point where, you know, it would ruin it. It definitely fits.
Yes.
It's just not going to be the same. It's just not the same. I mean, sequels are rarely the same.
Right.
So, I mean, they're up against that anyway. Yeah. But it was worth it.
It was. So now that we've covered the heavy stuff,
the very important,
we'll leave you with that. I've covered a lot. you know, hopefully Royals, as we speak right now on Monday night, Royals are winning against the Brewers 3-0 in the bottom of the third. So hopefully the Brewers being in such a bad place, the Royals can rip off a few wins and kind of continue to pad that lead in the Central there as the as hopefully the Twins continue to come back to earth a little bit and the Tigers continue to struggle and the Royals cruise to their first ever possible American League Central crown. So, yeah, with that, we'll leave you for Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.
They kind of, well, they ran into St. Louis, and St. Louis is really good, so.
Yeah, fuck St. Louis, goddamn.
Yeah.
I will 100% say that it is because of jealousy that I hate St. Louis. Well, not entirely, but a large portion
they're
of it.
Also they're terrible, but.
Yeah, I mean, they're also St. Louis, literally but... the worst. They have the best run organization in baseball, hands down. Like, there's no way you can lose the players they've lost that you can, like, they hardly.
They're, like, a fifth of their team is hurt right now, and they're still going.
And, like, over the last 10 years, right, I mean, the Royals had, you know, Alex Gordon, Billy Butler, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, all, like, you know, all those, that huge class of really
top
well-known prospects.
First round
the Cardinals
picks.
Have had Oscar Tavares and Shelby Miller, and that was it. Like, they don't have, everybody else they've got has just been, like, even Albert Pujols was never, like, a big top 100 guy. No. So, I mean, it's just nuts what they can do. I don't know how they fucking do it.
I'm pretty sure they've sold their soul.
That's certainly possible. I'd like to say it was luck, but they've done it for like 15 straight years, so it can't be luck.
There's something nefarious going on, I'm sure.
Yeah, some sort of supernatural thing. Maybe Melisandre works. She is the red, the red queen. She very well could be in the Cardinals front office. So
I think that's it. There's literally no other explanation.
That is the only explanation.